Hi, everybody. I'm Carl Darden, and I'd like to welcome and thank all of you for joining us today on Navy Sports Central. I'm your host, and this is the official podcast of the Navy Sports Nation, where we take a deeper dive into Navy sports. In this episode, we're going to take an up-close and personal look at one of the biggest wins ever by a Navy team on the international stage, and we'll learn exactly how that came about by speaking with the person who made it happen. So stick with us, and by the time we're finished, you may wind up as big a fan of this sport as I am. Okay, here we go. Thanks for joining us, everybody. If you are a returning listener, we're glad you're back with us. And if you're here for the first time, thanks for checking us out. I am really, really excited about this show because we're going to be welcoming our very first guest to the Navy Sports Central podcast. He's one of the Navy coaches, and he's going to be giving you his unique perspective on what I think is the biggest win at an international competition that Navy athletes have experienced in a really long time. So you're not going to want to miss that. But first things first, we're going to go ahead and give you a quick recap of how Navy sports went over the weekend. And we're going to start with the NCAA swimming and diving competitions for the men. Those took place in Greensboro, North Carolina towards the end of last week, and Navy had several swimmers competing. First, we have the 800 freestyle relay team of Ryan Walters, Daniel Cook, Garrett McGovern, and Dominic Wallace. They placed 20th in the event with a time of 6 minutes, 20.96 seconds. And on the following day, Luke Johnson clocked a time of 4 minutes, 19.48 seconds to finish 35th in the 500 freestyle. And by the way, Garrett McGovern also qualified in that event. He came in with a time of 4 minutes, 21.88 seconds, which was good for 49th place. Next, we have Micah Oh, who qualified in the 200 individual medley. He came in with a time of 1 minute, 48.39 seconds, and that was good for a 49th place finish as well. And just so you know, I'm going in chronological order here, so I'll be bouncing back and forth between diving and swimming. In the 1 meter diving event, Jake Hedrick finished 38th and Patrick Carter 46th. Next, in the 100 backstroke, Caleb Malden finished 30th with a time of 46.71 seconds. In the 3 meter diving, Jake Hedrick placed 39th and followed that up with a 36th place finish in the platform diving competition on Saturday. And finally on Saturday, Micah Oh placed 36th in the 200 butterfly, and in the 1650 freestyle, Luke Johnson finished 18th with a time of 15 minutes, 4.61 seconds. That was an impressive showing by the Navy senior, and while we're at it, I'd like to break down that time and distance a little bit. When you look at 1,650 yards, that's obviously 100 yards shorter than a mile, and Johnson swam it in 15 minutes, basically, and that's as fast as most people normally walk. Just to give you some perspective, when I was in flight school, we had to do a mile swim as part of our pilot training, and they gave us 70 minutes. I completed it in 68, and I was the second to the last guy out of the water, and I probably drank about half the pool. Okay, back to business. I did want to finish up by letting you know that the men's and women's swimming and diving teams will be competing in the Patriot League Championships April 21st through the 24th. Now let's continue running down the rest of the sports, and we'll start with women's volleyball. They are led by Captain Maddie Scatoni and went 2-1 over the weekend, including a big win over American University. The Mids beat them in straight sets, which is the first time that's happened since 1987. All right, now it's time to take a quick look at tennis. The men's team is still undefeated. They shut out Loyola 7-0, and they are led by Andrew Tan, who plays number one singles. The Navy women's team dropped a close one to Richmond 4-3, but they are still looking good with a 2-1 record. Those two teams always play each other tough, and this time it just came down to one singles match where the Mids just couldn't quite pull it out. The outdoor track and field season also kicked off this past weekend, with the Mids having a very strong showing at their spring invitational. Clayton Thompson ran the 110-meter hurdles in 14 seconds flat, which qualifies as the second-best time in Navy history. Audrey Fernandez hit a triple jump of 39 feet 5 inches, which qualifies as fifth-best overall in the Navy record books. And by the way, both teams qualified a total of 38 athletes for their respective conference championships. Now, as we move on to soccer, both the men's and women's teams won by identical 1-0 scores. The men defeated Bucknell on a goal by David Jackson. He scored in the 33rd minute of the first half, and the Mids made that stand up. The women needed overtime to take down Loyola, but they got the job done in the 94th minute on a nice header by Caitlin Duran after the Greyhound goalie was caught out of position. Okay, moving on to Navy baseball, the Mids extended their winning streak to 19 games over two seasons by way of a 7-1 win over Bucknell in the first game of a doubleheader. The Bison did win that second game to end the winning streak, but get a look at what happened in the third game of the series, which was played on Sunday. Bucknell was up 9-5 going into the bottom of the eighth inning, and Navy scored 10 runs to close them out. Bucknell did pick up one more run, but the final score was 15-10. And finally, we're down to men's and women's lacrosse. Let's go ahead and take a look at the men first. They moved to 3-0 overall and 1-0 in Patriot League play by beating Bucknell 13-10. The Mids used a 6-goal outburst in the third quarter to pull away in that game. Jack Sweeney had a hat trick, and Pat Skalniak had 2 goals and 4 assists for the Mids. And in what was probably the most important game of the weekend, at least as far as I'm concerned, the Navy women's lacrosse team came from behind and earned a big-time win over Army 13-12, and it was not easy. This game was on ESPN+, and I started watching it on Saturday before I had to go out and run a couple of errands. When I left, the Mids were up 7-3, and I figured they had things under control. And then when I came back, it was about maybe 16 minutes to go in the game, and they were down by 12-10. I tell you, I just about had a stroke when I saw that score. But that was right about the time that Navy's defense really clamped things down, and it was really impressive to watch Navy goalkeeper Joe Torres in the cage. I mean, she came up big time and again in the second half, just when the Black Knights looked like they were going to pull away, and several of those shots that she stopped were from point-blank range. Then, with just under 11 minutes to go, Navy captain Marina Lazaridis came through with a goal to cut the lead to 1. Ellie Lecker followed that up with another goal less than 5 minutes later, and then finally, Nicole Victory came through with the eventual game winner with less than 4 minutes to go. So Navy gets the all-important win in the star match, and I will say that Army's program has come a long way since they first started. They've only had lacrosse there for about 5 or 6 years. I think their first year in competition was at the club level in about 2015 or 2016, and Coach Kristen Skyra has really got them playing well. And here's something else worth noting. Coach Skyra used to be an assistant here at Navy under Coach Timshaw about 10 years ago. So it seems like Army's decided that if they want to either get a program up and running properly or take a current program and fix it, the best way to go about that is to hire a former Navy assistant. And I point you to Army head football coach Jeff Monken as Exhibit A. He was the slot back coach at Navy under Coach Paul Johnson before following Johnson to Georgia Tech. Monken then went on to coach at Georgia Southern before arriving at West Point. So if you want to do something right, just hire a former Navy coach. It's that simple. Okay, that'll take care of our Navy sports recap for the weekend. We'll be back shortly with our deep dive segment. All right, we are back. Now, before I introduce our next guest, I wanted to give you all some background on today's deep dive. The Navy rowing program has had a rich history over the years. They've produced national team members, as well as Olympians and world champions. If you go back to 1952, their Grade 8 crew went to the Helsinki Olympics and won the gold medal by defeating the Soviet Union. And they were only sophomores at the time. That crew never lost a race in their time at the academy, going 29-0. More recently, Dan Lyons, who's in the class of 81, made the national team, won a world championship in 1986, and also competed in the 1988 Olympics in Seoul, South Korea. Both the men's and women's teams are recognized among the finest programs in the country, and they do it mostly with walk-on athletes. So that brings us to the Henley Royal Regatta. This is an elite international rowing event held every year in Henley-on-Thames, which is about an hour west of London. For 2019, they decided to add an event commemorating the 100th anniversary of the King's Cup. This was originally held in 1919 to promote peace and healing after World War I. 6 teams were invited at the time, which was the UK, France, Australia, New Zealand, Canada, and the US. For the 100th anniversary, they invited the original 6 teams in addition to Germany and the Netherlands. So the US representatives would be competing against the very best military crews in the world. So how did Navy wind up representing the United States? That's what we're going to find out now, because our guest today was involved in the process from the very beginning. He and his staff also handpicked the team that represented our country at the Henley Royal Regatta that eventually won the King's Cup. He was the captain of the Rutgers rowing team as a senior and a member of the U.S. national team for 2 years, placing 5th in the lightweight fours at the Nations Cup in Milan, Italy. Then he returned to Rutgers to coach the lightweight team, earning a #1 national ranking in 2000, and this crew also competed at the Henley Royal Regatta. He has been at the Naval Academy since 2001 and has coached the heavyweight crew since 2012. He has mentored several rowers who have gone on to make the under-23 U.S. national team, and the Naval Academy rowing program continues to thrive under his direction. So we are very pleased to have Coach Rob Friedrich join us today on the Navy Sports Central podcast. Hey, Coach Friedrich, thanks for being with us today. We're really glad to have you join us on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so as I've kind of set up for the audience, the main goal today is to really kind of take a really deep dive into the whole King's Cup experience. And what I'd like to do as we kind of carry on this conversation is just kind of walk us through that whole process, really, from the time that you became aware of the fact that the King's Cup event was going to be part of the Henley Royal Regatta, right on through to team selection, preparation, and especially that experience when you got there to Henley on Thames and just being able to experience that whole thing.
Yeah, well, it started off spring of 2018. I was just approached on the phone, a call from England with this idea. You know, they hadn't had anything solidified yet, but they knew the 100th anniversary of the King's Cup was coming up. They knew they wanted to do something. They weren't sure the scope of it or how many countries that they could get back to Henley in a military event. So originally, it piqued my interest right away because I've been to Henley before with the Naval Academy, once in my former job with Rutgers University. And so I knew exactly what kind of experience this would be for not only our athletes, but our school. And having it as a military event just kind of, you know, really made everything that much more exciting, competing against other countries' militaries and what it really meant, the history behind it, you know, celebrating, you know, the 100th anniversary of, you know, the end of World War One and the peace regatta that they held at Henley at that time. So it was, you know, it was a long process as they built the plan, but it piqued our interest right away.
All right, good. Now I just kind of want to talk a little bit about how the whole idea of having team selection, number one, but secondly, was the decision made right away to just have the Naval Academy represent the United States as a military event since they basically had a rowing team, or was there a little bit more debate around that?
That's a great question. Henley reached out and Chris Hartley was the main organizer and he pretty much did everything. And we owe him a lot of gratitude to setting this whole thing up. And he reached out to myself and I believe he reached out to the West Point coach, you know, the Army rowing coach at the U.S. Military Academy to see if we were interested because he wasn't sure exactly how many countries he could bring over there and, you know, want to participate in this type of regatta. And so I think he was hedging his bets. And I think luckily our interest was immediate and we knew we had the resources to make it happen. And he wasn't sure that the Army crew at West Point had the time or effort or manpower or resources. And so it naturally became a joke with him. That said, well, Army represented the United States in the last King's Cup, so maybe it was the Navy's turn.
Yeah, and I'll be quite honest with you. I didn't even know that Army had a rowing team until you just mentioned that. So.
But it is. They have a club rowing team. It's not a varsity sport like it is at the Naval Academy. We have a tradition. We just celebrated our 150th anniversary of rowing at the Naval Academy. And so the Army crew has got a great club program. I mean, they are fantastic. And there was at one point he talked about maybe we could, if we didn't have eight countries that wanted to participate, maybe we could bring both the Army and Navy crews over from the United States. But, you know, I think that it's as the regatta and the idea of it began to grow, you know, many different countries seemed to interested in the idea.
Right, right. All right, cool. So one of the things that I picked up on when I was watching the videos is the fact that they were mixed crews, right? And I thought that was a great innovation. I thought it was really cool. So what I was interested in finding out from you is how did the fact that there were mixed crews affect how you practiced? I'm sure one of the key things is having everybody learn how to row with each other. So now you're working with, you know, obviously you coach the heavyweight team, but you're dealing with your lightweight team and also your women's team to select those folks. How did that process go?
Sure. Yeah. Just the decision of having mixed crews was one of surprise from us. That wasn't originally what had been planned for the King's Cup. But when you thought about it and the peace regatta 100 years ago, you know, having women now in the military, it all made sense, right? And so once we knew that that's exactly what they had planned for the King's Cup, we decided to make this an entire boathouse event. So include our lightweight men's program, our heavyweight men's program, and our women, and to take as many athletes over there for the experience. And so the head coaches of our three programs at Hubbard Hall, the Navy Boathouse, came together and we basically picked what we thought were the best athletes that could represent us overseas in general. And so it became, we were able to bring 2/8 worth of athletes, including coxswains, so that's 18 people. And some of it, a lot of it had to do with our military summer training. So some of our athletes couldn't go. And so there were obstacles kind of along the way of choosing that group. But we knew if we chose, you know, 16 rowers and 2 coxswains, that we would create a very fast 8 out of that group. And so once the NCAA championships for women and the IRA championships for men ended, we gave the team, those 18 athletes, a chance to recover a little bit, a few days off, and then we regrouped. And it was, the experience was easier and better than I could have ever imagined. You know, the three teams coming together had so much more fun. They don't usually get a chance to hang out and to practice together, train together normally. And they bonded together very quickly. And we started taking 2/8s out on the water, and we had 4 women, right? So we had 2 women in each boat for the selection process. And, you know, things just kind of fell into place. You know, typically, you know, in a boat, if we had to have 2 women in there, but typically you would have your best rhythm setters at the front of the boat, right? And then your most powerful athletes in the middle of the boat. You know, we call it the engine room. And then your lighter, more technical athletes in the bow of the boat. And our women, even though they were some of the strongest women that, you know, we've ever had at the Naval Academy for rowing, and both have been invited to U.S. national team events, they were also some of the lighter athletes on the team. So, you know, it was clear that they fit really well into the bow of the boat, you know, and we had some very heavy hitters from our heavyweight team that we knew we could fill in the middle of the boat for strength and power. And it just worked out that 2 of our lightweights that were great rhythm setters and great leaders fit well together and worked with everyone to form the stern pair of the boat, which led the crew, you know, all the way, you know, over to England and down the race course. So, you know, as far as selection goes, it was fairly easy. You know, the biggest question I get, you know, about the King's Cup is, you know, how do you combine the technique of women rowing with men? It's not that hard. You know, rowing is rowing. And our women specifically, the women we had in the boat, and all the women that made the trip with us, were exceptional, you know, and could fit into the boat with the men, no problem, row as long as the men did, which was a big question, and were as fired up and as intense as any of the men were for this event.
Right, right. Yeah. You can kind of see that too. I remember when I was watching the video, just at the very beginning, how they're just kind of firing each other up and, you know, patting each other on the back and everything, just kind of getting ready to go. That was really kind of cool to see. Okay, we're going to take a quick break now. When we return, we'll continue our conversation with Rob Friedrich, the head coach of the Navy rowing team. Welcome back to Navy Sports Central. My name is Carl Darden, and we are here with Rob Friedrich, who is the coach of the Navy rowing team. And we're continuing our conversation around the team's experience at the Henley Royal Regatta in 2019. Let's talk race strategy here for a second. I think that I'm kind of curious to know, when it comes to the formatting of the races. Now, this one obviously was a knockout event where you just had 2 boats going head-to-head all the way through into the finals. Does the race strategy change when it comes to dealing with that kind of format versus multiple boats on the same body of water?
It does a little bit. At the Henley, and luckily I've been there enough to know what the races are like, you know, and a head-to-head racing on the Henley course on a narrow course where they're so close together and the crowd is so loud and virtually on top of the race course right along the banks of the Thames. It's, if you can get out to a lead, you can really control the race, and it, which is different than six lane racing that we do here in the States for our NCAA championship and IRA championship for men. So it is a little bit of a different strategy, you know, that type of dual racing. But the beginning of our race plan doesn't necessarily change that much. We always plan to have a great start and settle into a strong, powerful rhythm. But after the first 500 meters, the race plan is adjustable and can change depending upon our crew, our competition, where we are, you know, in the race as far as being behind or ahead. So we do have a few different race plans in the middle where we can control the rate and control the crew if we're ahead, or just settle in and make sure that we are prepared to finish strong in the last 500 meters if it's a close race.
Right. Okay, cool. I did look at the first two races, and then I watched the final race against the German boat. Now, one thing I observed in the first two races is that the crew got out to a pretty comfortable lead early and basically controlled the race, like you said. And I think, if I recall, in both races, they won by 2+ boat lengths.
Now, the race against the Germans was a lot tighter.
So what I'd like to do is kind of have you walk us through that in 500 meter increments. You know, the thing that interested me as I was kind of watching that race was just kind of figuring out, okay, I wonder what's going on here. You know, so maybe you could walk us through that in 500 meter increments, basically what the strategy was, and did it unfold the way you expected?
Sure. Well, first, the first two races that we had, you know, we had some great racing, you know, and towards the middle and the end, you know, we try to save and conserve as much energy as we can because of the, you know, the type of regatta it is. You're racing every day, you know, typically at a Olympic or national team event, you're racing every other day or even have more rest than that. So when you're expected to race every day, you try to conserve as much energy as possible. And I thought both the German crew and the US crew leading up to the finals did a good job of being ready for that final. And yeah, in the first 500 meters against Germany, we knew that they were a very experienced crew, you know, former national team rowers, one Olympic gold medalist. And they may have not been in the boat for very long together, but neither had we. And, you know, we knew maybe we didn't have the, you know, accolades internationally as they did, but we were just coming off a very competitive season, very fit and very motivated as a group. And the bonds that they created together in our crew, really, they were ready to go to war, you know, literally. And we knew the Germans had a fast start. We did as well. But the idea was to make sure that we knew how we can control the race and not react too much to what the Germans were doing. And so at the beginning of the race, we actually got a lead on the Germans by a couple seats. And then we settled down into our normal race pace, and the Germans didn't settle. And they kept their rating very high, above a 40 on the rate, and started to eat into our lead, and then eventually took the lead onto their own. And I saw this on the video kind of unfolding, but our coxswain, who steers the boat and is the leader out there for the race, is Matt Cadenoso. He's been trained to, you know, watch what the other team is doing and not necessarily react too much, but just get an understanding of how the race might unfold. So when he saw the Germans get that lead, he saw how much effort it was taking and how much, you know, how high of a cadence it was costing them to get a lead on us and to try to maintain it. So he kept the athletes relaxed and he calmed them down, and he wasn't worried that the Germans were going to get out to a little bit of a lead. And sure enough, once the Germans got out to about a 3/4 of a boat length lead, they just sat there. And our coxswain was patient. Our rowers were patient. They kept their length. They were rowing their own race. And that really lasted through the second 500 meters. As we approached halfway, you know, we have a few moves planned at the halfway mark and in the second half of the race to really jumpstart our speed. And we started, you know, to attack the Germans, you know, and really going after them in the second half when we knew, you know, that's when they'd be the most vulnerable. So we started to gain a little bit of ground, a little bit more. We stumbled a little bit because the Thames race course can be, you know, pretty hectic with boaters and others, you know, watching the regatta. So we kind of stalled out a little bit, but the coxswain regrouped them as we got closer to the Germans. And just as we were approaching 500 meters to go, we made another push and we started to pull even. And as you can see on the race recording, the announcer started to get very exciting. You know, this was one of the closest races probably of the regatta. And it was just exciting that two countries' militaries were competing at that high of a level and making this a really exciting race. You know, 500 meters to go as we entered the grandstand, I knew we had a strong sprint. I knew we had raced smart and had a little bit more to go. And you can tell a little bit with the way that, again, the cadence that the Germans were holding, they didn't have that much left in the tank. So, you know, as they reached the grandstand area, about 300, 400 meters to go, I knew we had the race won. Even though it was close through there, I knew with our race plan and just watching them row and the confidence that they had, they weren't going to, you know, give up that lead. They were going to continue to pull away. And that's what they did. And you just have to know your athletes and to know the race plan and how they're looking coming down the race course to know whether they had that extra gear at the end. And we knew that they did.
Right, right. Yeah, it's pretty cool. And to your point around the announcers getting really excited, yeah, that was totally evident, especially those last 200 to 300 meters, because they could see, you know, Overlord getting that nose in front there and just slowly increasing and them wondering out loud, okay, do the Germans have enough to come back? And they'd actually made a point of, as you know, mentioning the conditioning of the Navy team. So they felt like that was a big difference maker. So now I want to kind of walk into an area that I basically stumbled upon when I was writing the blog article last year. And in talking with my classmates, Scott Gordon and Tom Callahan, I was getting a sense. I mean, I felt like they still were really connected to the program, Scott in particular. And I kind of started thinking about how the relationships that athletes build with each other. And I just was thinking, I said, it must be different for rowers because, you know, they, in a football team, you know, you got a quarterback, you got a defensive end, you got an offensive guard, whatever. They all have different jobs, right? And certainly if they all do their jobs the best, the outcome is usually pretty good. With rowing, as obviously, they are trained to do the exact same thing. And I just kind of thought out loud to myself that, you know, maybe that makes things a little bit different with them. And I kind of started getting on this whole subject of, you know, what it means to be able to just get in sync like that and to be able to be together, you know, mind and body, you know, that sort of thing. And I actually got a response back from Dan Lyons on that whole thing. And he mentioned this whole concept of swing, which, you know, was a new term to me, obviously being a novice when it comes to rowing. And I wanted to have you kind of go into that a little bit. What does it mean? Can you physically see it? And what does it feel like when you're a member of a team that hits that zone, so to speak?
Yeah, sure. It's well, first, Scott Gordon's definitely one of our biggest fans, and he's been amazing through this whole process and supporting the program. And Dan Lyons, as you said, is one of our most accomplished rowers rowing in the Olympics after he graduated from the Naval Academy. And you know, they know the bonds that are created at Hubbard Hall. And, like you said, rowers, it is a different sport. You know, everything has to be done together and for each other. And you know, a boat cannot win a race if one person's having a bad day or if they're off the rhythm and not doing things together. So they go through a lot together, and makes our sport a little bit unique in that respect. And those bonds kind of carry over after college and after racing. But that mention of swing that you described, it's hard to attain. And I'll be honest, I'm not sure all of our crews at the Naval Academy have necessarily felt, you know, that swing, which is kind of the perfect stroke where all eight rowers are working together and going fast and making it feel and look easy. You know, that's really the definition of it. And it's spiritual in a way when people talk about it, because, you know, it's eight rowers rowing together in unity, and it's effortless, and you're still going fast. And it's something that not every rower has attained or felt, I don't think. And, you know, this crew, I think it's hard in a race like at the King's Cup to determine whether they had the right swing. And it, when you're put in under so much pressure in a situation like that, you know, I don't think swing ever comes into their mind. You know, it's just the burn of their legs and in their lungs. And it's just effort that is going beyond what they think they can do. And, you know, really focusing on each other, you know, and just exhausting everything that they have. But I think they have reached the point where in the practice leading up to the King's Cup, they'd come in from a practice on the Henley course, or from the Naval Academy when we were training together, or at the Eaton race course where we were training briefly before we moved over to Henley over in England, where they came off the water and they're like, "Coach, that was amazing. That was awesome." And so that's when you know, like they've kind of reached that point of swing where it's something that they'll never forget, you know, and it's something that not all rowers feel, and it's great. I'm sure it's hard to find when you just throw a boat together of great athletes to find that cohesiveness, you know, to meld together in that way. But, you know, these athletes were special. That's for sure.
All right. Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad you're able to share that, because that's something that I made a point of writing down. I said, I definitely want to get his take on this, because it's something that's fascinated me ever since I first heard about it. Okay, so we're kind of coming to the close here, but I wanted to know from your perspective, and granted, the pandemic really kind of messed things up a little bit, but when it comes to what that victory at the King's Cup meant to the program and what it means for the future of the program, what can you tell us about that? I mean, do you anticipate Navy being invited to more international events once things settle down?
I would love to think so. Although I do put things in perspective, you know, and we are at the Naval Academy and we do have a common goal. And, you know, at the top of that goal is preparing our students to become leaders in our military, you know, and that's first and foremost in our mission at the Naval Academy, whether it's at the boathouse or not. And I, you know, this international event with the King's Cup kind of fell into our lap, and it was, you know, a perfect time to, especially as we went into our 150th year of Navy rowing, to kind of celebrate that and bring crews over. But it wasn't without obstacles, like I had mentioned before. You know, not all of our athletes can go to a race like this or compete internationally because of the different military training that they have to do over the summer, you know, to prepare for their service selection when they commission and graduate from the Naval Academy. And so, you know, can we go to more international races? I think we'd love to. We'll be invited, sure. You know, I think we represented the United States and the Navy very well over there, you know, just not in our rowing ability, but, you know, what we mean for the U.S. military. But at the same time, you know, we've got other objectives too. And, you know, those things can't get in the way. You know, we have to make sure that we know what our mission is. And, you know, the superintendent here, the commandant, and our athletic director and the dean of students here at the Naval Academy work very well together to make sure that we're all on the same page. And, you know, our rowing team is no different.
Right, right. Yeah, and that's a very good point. Yeah, the mission drives everything else. And I think that's one reason why I believe that Navy sports fans are so supportive of their athletes, not just of the program, but of the athletes, because they know what they're looking at further down the road. It's pretty neat. So that pretty much wraps up the interview, Coach. And what I want to do is kind of give you a chance to get us caught up on what's coming down the road for the program. Do you have any kind of rowing camps coming up in the summer, you know, that sort of thing? Anything about the program that you want to kind of get out there to the fans and perhaps potential Navy rowers in the future?
Sure. You know, right now during the pandemic, things have been tough, but we've been able to practice. We've been able to train different protocols, as well as, you know, doing a lot of outdoor training, outdoor erging, running, you know, and trying to get out in the water as much as we can. You know, and all three of our teams at the Boathouse have really done a great job with that, you know. And so I think the unity that we've now created inside the Boathouse is on full display, you know, and working well together is really going to take us a long way into the future. And, you know, our recruits are excited about our King's Cup event. Our recruits are excited about, you know, what we're doing as a program for both, you know, for all of our programs, lightweight men, heavyweight men, and our women's team. You know, so it's kind of a new era, you know, and every year we get to work with a different group, a new group of recruits and athletes. And we still develop quite a few walk-on rowers here at the Naval Academy, which, you know, not many colleges and sports still do, but we're putting walk-on athletes that never rowed in high school that learned to row at the Naval Academy. We're putting them onto U.S. national teams.
Wow. So
that's lightweight, heavyweight, and women, all three of our programs. You know, Ed King was a lightweight rower that was in the Rio Olympics, and he had never rowed before he got to the Academy. And we have multiple athletes going to the U23 national team every summer, you know, that are coming out of our program. So we're proud of what we're doing. And I think the recruits, we have a specific type of recruit, and they're all in, you know, with the military side and what we do at the Boathouse, and we do things maybe a little bit differently, but we're proud of that, you know, and we are not like every other program or every other school, but we get to compete with the best in the country, you know, and we're, you know, on the men's side, we're top 10, and our women are making the NCAA championships, winning Patriot League championships every year. So we're competitive regardless of our situation, you know, and we make the best of it. But yeah, we do have some Navy camps as well during the summer. It was canceled last year. We usually have overnight camps for high school athletes. This year it's only day camps, you know, and you can kind of research us online if you want to learn how to row, or if you're a high school oarsman that is just looking for a camp and want to learn more about the Naval Academy. So that's definitely an option out there for those high school athletes.
All right. Great stuff. Well, listen, Coach, thank you so much for being with us. It's been a pleasure talking with you and learning more about the Navy rowing program. And I'm hopeful that this won't be the last of our conversations, because I know as we kind of start heading into the fall season, hopefully we'll have this COVID stuff way in our rearview mirror, and there'll be an opportunity maybe to connect with you again to kind of talk about what you're looking at in the fall season.
Oh, that'd be great. Thank you for having me.
All right. Take care, Coach. Bye-bye.
Okay, let's go ahead and take a quick breather. When we come back, we'll get into our question of the day and then take a look and see how our two athletes on their midwatch are doing. Okay, we are back. But before we go into our question of the day, I just wanted to thank Coach Friedrich for joining us on Navy Sports Central and giving us his perspective on the King's Cup and the Henley Royal Regatta. That had to be an awesome experience for the entire Navy rowing program. And by the way, you guys just have to watch a video of the King's Cup final on YouTube. I'm going to go ahead and put a link for you in the show notes so you can check it out. But trust me on this one, I've seen it at least 20 times and it never gets old. All right, here's our question. The Navy rowing team covered 2,000 meters in just under 6.5 minutes to win the King's Cup. So let's think about this for a minute. And this is for those of you like me who've never held an oar in your hands. If I put you and five of your friends in a shell with two experienced Navy rowers and a coxswain, with one lesson under your belt, how long do you think it would take your crew to row 100 meters? You can answer by calling our Navy Sports Central voicemail number at 623-282-4896. Again, that's 623-282-4896. And if you don't want to leave a voicemail, you can go with a text message instead. In fact, let's just go ahead and do that from now on instead of using Twitter to respond, okay? So just stick with the voicemail number, 623-282-4896. That way, we just have one way to respond, and it just makes things nice and easy. Now, we didn't have any responders to our question from the first episode, and that's not totally unexpected, this being a new podcast. So let's see how we do this week. All right, one more quick break, and then we'll come back and check in with our two athletes on the midwatch. And while I'm thinking about it, I just wanted to thank everybody out there who got back to me, letting me know how they liked the first episode and the fact that they did share it with some of their other friends. This being a new podcast, of course, we're always looking for new listeners. So if you like what you've been hearing so far, be sure to share this link with as many Navy fans out there as possible. Thanks very much. Okay, it's time to check in with our midwatch athletes. You guys will remember from our last episode that we're going to be focusing on Charlie Connolly, who is a pitcher for the Navy baseball team, and Nicole Victory, who is an attacker for the women's lacrosse team. Let's start with Charlie first. Since our last episode, he has started one game, and it was the first game of a doubleheader against Bucknell, and he went six innings, allowing one run on four hits and struck out 10, which is actually one short of his career high. Charlie is 3-0 on the year, and his ERA has dropped down to 1.93, and the opposing batters are only managing to hit about 196 against him. Now we'll take a look and see how Nicole Victory did. She just turned in a terrific performance against Army. Nicole had 5 points to tie for the team lead with Ellie Lecker. She had 3 goals, including the game winner, and a couple of really, really nice assists. As I mentioned earlier in the podcast, Nicole scored the eventual winning goal with less than 4 minutes to go in the game, and it was a really crazy shot. She took it from the left side and bounced it past the goalie, and it hit after it came off the ground, it hit the right pipe and then bounced up and hit the crossbar before landing behind her. So it was really funny to watch the response because it took a second for the mids to realize it was actually a goal. Now in the season, Victory is a team leader in points with 20, and she's second in goals with 13, which is one behind Ellie Lecker. And Victory is also very accurate too. She's getting 80% of her shots on goal and converting on about 2/3 of those. So both of our athletes on the midwatch continue to perform at a high level, and we'll keep the updates coming on them all the way through to the end of the season. That's going to do it for this edition of Navy Sports Central. Thank you all for joining us, and if you liked what you heard, be sure to follow us anywhere you get your podcast. Remember to get back to us on our Navy Sports Central question of the day. You can call 623-282-4896 to leave a voicemail or a text message. Again, that's 623-282-4896. And just a quick reminder, the views and opinions expressed on this podcast are solely my own and do not represent those of the U.S. Naval Academy or Navy Athletics. By the way, the music used in Navy Sports Central comes to you courtesy of Audio Jungle. This is a great website for purchasing the rights to use music from thousands of artists around the world. And those we feature in this podcast will be credited in the show notes. Talk to you soon, everybody. Until next time, my name is Carl Darden. Go Navy, beat Army.